This is Deads on the Podcast presents
Warzone Eternal.
Welcome to Warzone Eternal. I am your host, Rick, and co-host,
Alex from Resident Nova Games.
And the other
one. I'm just a, you know.
What are you?
I'm you know, background noise.
Is that what you are?
it's Rick Talk, as they like to call me here on the podcasts.
And of course, here at Thunder Ford Studios, which is
Rick my Talk. Space. Yeah, my space. Yeah.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop.
So, what are we talking about today?
I guess in the last week, something's been going on that's been...
Really?
Yeah, no, right.
Mm-hmm. What?
Keeping a couple of us a little bit busy.
Yeah.
Not me.
You've been... Like, I can't imagine what the... Behind the scenes for you, because you're at the time of this recording, it's at 126,000.
Correct, yep.
That's huge. That's a great success.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're thrilled. I mean, compared to where we were last year,
yeah,
this is magnitudes better, and the reception has suggested that we should be doing magnitudes better.
Yes,
yeah. people are pleased, and yeah, the number of comments of like, yeah, this is great that you went back to back to the drawing board. You
canceled the models, and yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, no. So people are genuinely enthused and. Yeah, so the number of backers is, I think, about the same as where we were last year.
Okay.
Just shows the number of additional,
yeah,
the amount more that people are enthused about this, yeah. Right?
So you've been getting, what, an hour of sleep every night?
Yeah, it depends, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, we've got Warzone's got an international fan base.
Yep.
So we've got people, you know, sending messages or posting comments almost 24 hours a day.
Wow.
I will say this, though. That group down in Antarctica are the worst.
Yeah, I mean, they keep pinging me about what the shipping cost is going to be.
Right.
And I just cannot calculate it for you.
Right.
It's on the boat.
FBOAP. Let's just hope that's what we can set it to.
Yeah, so no, it's been good. But yeah, Brian and I have been trying to be as responsive as we can. Mm-hmm. You know, recognizing the fact that, yeah, I mean, we're U.S. based, right? So there's going to be times when we're sleeping.
Where you're sleeping.
I think it's funny in the chats and in the comments on the Kickstarter, you guys literally have to let everybody know. It's like, okay, it is X amount of time. It is bedtime here in the States. We will reconvene in the morning.
Yep.
Please stand by. Yep, you know? Exactly. And then you get the, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance and or whatever, you know, and then the static.
Yeah, the screen goes yep. black. Yeah, exactly.
But you just dated yourself.
It's been much more manageable the last couple of days. Because,
yeah.
I mean, like with any Kickstarter, you know, we've the initial multi-day hype has kind of petered out. And so now we're at the, you know, sustain and, you know, continue marketing, continue advertising, try to grab some more eyes on the project. And we're seeing that. I mean, they're not massive numbers every day like they were in the first 2 days, but sure. We're getting new backers every day.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's great.
It's been fun to watch the social media pages and the comments and the people going, oh, yeah, I saw this at AdeptCon. I had to get in.
Yep.
And then, of course, like I've got a group out in New York that's like, they're chomping at the bit for more information.
we're working on that, right? I mean, I sent an update out today, you know, specifically noting like, hey, there's questions. We've seen these questions. We do want to answer these questions. Things like, well, how can we manage our pledge in the pledge manager, right? I want to be able to swap things around. How can I use the money that I've put into it as a credit to be able to pick things a la carte?
Or yeah.
Trying to figure that out. And, you know, the thing is, right, with I'm going to go down a small,
a small rabbit hole.
Yeah. You know, so pledge managers, right? Whoever you're using, whether it's BackerKit or GameFound or whatever, they're great because they really help offload a lot of the burden of trying to figure out, you know, who gets what and how do you pull pull your fulfillment order lists.
Right.
But those are all, you know, constructed applications, right? They have boundaries, right? This is the way it's built to work.
Right.
And so anything that you want to do, you have to try to figure out, is that something that can be achieved within the context of that pledge manager? And so I'm sort of speaking as we're talking about this to a couple comments that we got on the Kickstarter page about, like, well, hey, this is a pretty simple programming fix. Well, the difference is it's not just like a programming fix that we're putting in regards to whatever our pledge manager is. This is a proprietary third-party pledge manager, right? A vendor that we're making use of. And so we can't just pop in there and say, you know, here's what you need to do with your code. You just need to recode your application.
Just recode everything.
Well, so I can understand, like, somebody who is a coder, they can look at this and say, well, this would actually be a fairly simple thing to address.
Sure.
But a company like BackerKit, for instance, supports hundreds of Kickstarters a year.
A day.
Yeah, right, exactly. Jeez. Yeah, you're right. My numbers are off by magnitudes. And so in that sense, you know, the fact that they're really good at customer service, really responsive, you know, that's an awesome thing. Right. But to also expect them to be able to go and change the underlying code to allow functionality that they had not originally built in, you know, it's just not something you can ask. Right. Or it's not something you can ask unless it's got a number of zeros behind it.
Right. Nice.
So I have a question for Alex in regards to the Kickstarter. It has been a week.
1 week,
yep. 1 week as of today that it's been up.
Yep.
Well, I guess actually this is the 8th day, so.
Sure.
All right.
Sure. Started on a Tuesday, and it is a Tuesday. It is a week.
It's a week.
In that week, what has been one of the biggest challenges for you and the team in regards to to the Kickstarter in general? What's been like a hurdle that you guys have been having to jump over? Maybe repeatedly.
It's a good question. I think a lot of it is trying to make sure that we are, you know, responsive to the questions as they come in, recognizing that, you know, sometimes they're going to be, you know, one-off or outlier questions that maybe, you know, maybe don't need to be addressed as quickly, but trying to identify in there, okay, these are the things that people are asking repeatedly. And so
like coming up with an FAQ potentially.
Well, right, yeah. But you know, the funny thing about FAQs, right? And I guess I'm guilty of it myself as a chronic Kickstarter backer.
Yeah, 130 some odd.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey.
Wait. What?
Kickstarter's been around for a while. All right.
No. So this is what I apologize that I'm going to take it off rails a little bit. When it launched, I went in there, you know, to look at it and everything, and I backed it.
Yeah.
Right. And so I could read the comments. just kidding. But when I looked at it, when it says ResNova Games and it says two Kickstarters that they've launched or done, and it's 130, I think it's like 139 or 138 or something like that, backed. I was like, good God. What does this guy do?
Wow. Right? Backs Kickstarter.
Well, I don't know if I could actually, I didn't look to see what he backed.
Yeah.
Because you could learn a lot about a person, I think, based on just what kind of Kickstarters they back.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're pretty much all games.
Pretty much.
I know. and actually a lot of RPG stuff. So
better nerd.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that's a rabbit hole, but do you think that has helped you? As far as doing your own Kickstarters, the amount of Kickstarters you've backed?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. So it gave me some sense of what other Kickstarters have done, how they structured themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And it also gave me, I think it gave me some clarity on the idea of whether or not a Kickstarter has to have certain things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to fight this fight again, but, you know, last year's attempt, right, was premised on the idea of no stretch goals, no add-ons, because we wanted to keep it tight and quick, and people did not enjoy that.
Sure.
I still think that's an appropriate way to do a lot of Kickstarters. I think it could have been an appropriate way to do this Kickstarter again. We're a brand new company. We are using Kickstarter in the way that it's intended, which is help us raise capital so we can produce a new product, a new thing. Promising a bunch of stuff, adding more add-ons, more unlocks. I understand it creates a level of excitement.
Sure.
It gets people
engaged. It's a spectacle.
It is, yeah. But it also really, really easily derails a company's focus to a point where
you got too much on your plate.
Well, you just can't fulfill in a meaningful time frame. So then as a brand new company, you're looking at two different paths. We don't do stretch goals. We don't do unlocks. We don't give away a ton of free stuff. And people think that we're taking advantage of backers or we're like, this is just not a value add. So you risk that characterization. You go the other way, and now you've added a whole bunch of stuff. Your fulfillment has now bumped up by an entire year. And so now as a brand new company, people look at you and say, well, this is an unreliable company. Why would I ever give you money again? Because you guys cannot fulfill in a time frame that is meaningful to me.
Yeah.
And for me, that second one is the far more pressing one, right? The desire to gain reputation, to have people understand that we are a reliable company, that there's integrity behind the leadership of the company, and that we want to get this product to you as quickly as possible. So forget all of that. Just because it would be great to have people beginning to play with their toys.
Play the game, play with the toys. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So I still feel strongly that negative characterization is the more concerning one, right? The one of you don't deliver on time.
Yeah.
So this time we're trying to strike a balance. So we're still similar to where we were last year.
Okay.
We did every model that people have seen so far, they're seeing those renders because we have sculpted them.
Yeah.
We've done the work beforehand. There is no, here's a concept drawing.
Nope. Sure.
Here's an excerpt from an
Here's
old
what you mutant, could get.
Right. An excerpt from an old Mutant Chronicles role playing game book of a unit type, and we say, well, this is what we're gonna make next, right?
Yeah.
There's none of that. Right. And we're not going to do that at any point here because again, if we don't have it at least being sculpted right now, then that means that the summer's done before we even have our initial sculpts in hand.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And then you're from that point, you're like, now it's all the pre-production considerations, right? Where do we need to resize things? Where do we need to put cut lines? Where are we going to have detail areas that are going to be problems when making the molds that we're going to have to address?
Oh, sure.
We have to do that across the entire range of models.
Yep.
Right? I mean, we're talking about 104 models, I think, in this range. All of those figures have got to be prepped for pre-production, and then we go into production.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so every time we add something else, we add another model, or think about it, like you add something that's brand new. You add swag to the Kickstarter, right? Yeah. T-shirts or stickers or something else. Those all now become an additional production channel, right? Now you've got to have somebody else that you're working with to produce those things because the people that are going to print the Warzone Eternal rulebook, they're not also going to make dice for us.
Right.
Or stickers or anything, or any
of that other swag.
Right.
Yeah. So all different entities.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so every time you add something else to it, you've introduced a new relationship where there could be a hiccup. So, like, for instance, let's say we...
A time sink.
Yeah. We decide to add shirts, right? Right?
Sure.
And so now we've got a brand new manufacturer of shirts. And 50% of our backers say, I want a shirt. So they add those.
And right now, that'd be over 300 shirts.
Right, over 300 shirts.
Woo! Yep.
But also, let's say then the shirt manufacturer has a hiccup and delays. Now those 300 people, their entire order is being delayed because we introduced another supply channel. Mm-hmm. And so minimizing the number of places we're getting stuff from, minimizing the number of things that we're trying to create, those were the goals of last year's Kickstarter. And while it doesn't fully feel like it this time, it's pretty close to
it's
where
still
it is.
That.
Yeah. I mean, because, the starter sets are made up of figures that you can also get in the unit box or the expansion boxes, right? So you pick which one you want to go down. So there's 104 miniatures, but those 104 miniatures kind of represent the totality of all of the various options you could get out of this Kickstarter. Yeah. So now that was a very long answer to your question of, does backing 130 plus Kickstarters over the last 10 years, does that give me some insight into things? And I think it does because
absolutely.
I've backed both kinds. backed very sparse Kickstarters because I wanted the product.
Yep.
And then I've also backed enough Cool Mini or Not
131.
Ones. 131. There we go. Yeah. I've also backed enough Cool Mini or Not ones where it was, you know, they've been able to bake into their production cost having 30 stretch goals worth of stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's just like, okay, hit the pinata and what do we get today? So I've seen both, and I think both yeah. are both have their roles.
Sure.
All right. So my next follow-up question to that is, you with there being added in stretch goals, right? And I know that the new stretch goals have been dropped today.
Correct.
With the expansion boxes, and then the free PDF campaign pack for Graviton Protocol.
Yep.
And the more full color rulebook art, which is always nice.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Right. How many more can we say are potentially out there? Because were you expecting to get there, to get here? Right. The number we're currently at, was that a number you're like, yeah, we're absolutely going to make it to this number? And but now I'm wondering is.
So,
you know, every time you drop a miniature set, that's when the people are going to go like, that's when they come at it.
Yeah.
Right. And then we're not too far from the next one unlocking.
Yeah. So obviously everything you do in a Kickstarter is aspirational, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had hoped that we were going to get to a point where we had unlocked the expansion boxes
mm-hmm.
for all of the units that were in the starter boxes.
Right.
And with this last batch that came out, mm-hmm. As announced today, every unit in all of the starter boxes has a representation in an expansion box.
Okay.
So, yes, we hoped to get here, but we really had no way of knowing.
Correct.
If we were going to get here.
Sure.
I mean, I know I have insider knowledge, right? So I do know some stuff.
A little bit.
But as far as like the audience is like seeing these new miniatures come out, and I know that there's been other weird requests. There have been some really weird requests. And I'm curious, is there a Hail Mary type of thing that we're looking at putting out there? If we get to X, this is a Hail Mary drop.
We are actually going to be able to do.
Do a X. Like this weird ass thing.
Yeah.
Right. And when I say weird ass thing, that could be a bust of Thomas Jane. Right. You know,
as Mitch Hunter.
As Mitch Hunter.
Or just Thomas Jane.
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, you know, whatever. Right. Something, you know,
yeah.
as a Hail Mary piece. Because I know a lot of people are wondering about vehicles.
Oh. Yeah. So, no.
Okay. That's okay. Yep. Good answer.
And so I guess to the listeners, just to be clear, Rick Tock was not setting me up for a answer there. This is a truly organic dialogue.
Yeah.
No. So and one of the things that, you know, Brian and I've talked about is you know, so small vehicles. So when we talk about vehicles at all, mm-hmm. we're talking about small vehicles or the equivalent for Elgaroth, which would be some of their larger like mm-hmm. beasties, right?
Right.
So Hurricane Walker, Eradicator Death Droid, Bio Giant. Oh, they're awesome names. Yeah. Straight.
Yeah, they are.
straight out of
that. I have the urge to go pick an 80s movie.
Exactly. An 80s movie or the back of a Trapper Keeper of high school student.
Yeah. Yes.
So when we get to that point, when we get to that point, right. it's going to have to be after each of the factions are a bit more established, right?
Right.
Sure.
So an established means probably at least another unit or two of some sort and a little bit more variety in some of the support options for the current units.
Right.
Because we don't want to introduce the Eradicator Death Droid for Cybertronic and and everyone just looks at it and says, okay, great. So I have no way of killing
that. I'm dead. Right. That was a fun game.
Exactly.
So that might be something in a later wave.
Yeah,
beyond the Kickstarter.
100%. Yeah. And okay. We've hinted at this, but we will absolutely, during the course of the Kickstarter, be showing off or hinting at some of the things that we have planned already.
Okay.
That's
planned down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brian has mentioned numerous times, right, that he's got like seven waves worth of unit types statted out and ready to go. And he sends them over to me, you know, eagerly, and I look at them and say, "Well, let's slow down here a little bit." But yeah, no. So We want to get to those things, and we're hoping that we get to them, you know, sooner than later, but it's hard to say what that time frame looks like.
So if I were to make a suggestion or a request, again, this is just me being silly.
This is you being Rick.
Being Rick and being a little silly, is the faction, the Brotherhood.
Yep.
Yes. Right? The leader of the Brotherhood is the Cardinal.
The card, yep.
Right? Could we get you to cosplay as the Cardinal and then do a 3D scan of you, and then have that turned into a three-quarter bust and then print it out?
I'd pay for that.
I would pay for that, right?
I don't think that's in the
cards. So let's just put it this way, all right? Because, you know, the boys got me, right? That's a TikTok phrase, right?
Yeah.
The boys got me. All right. If this were for some weird reason to get a super surge and we hit $1 million. Right? $1 million.
That would be a surge.
That would be a super surge.
That would definitely be a surge.
So if it, let's say by end of the closing of this Kickstarter, if we got to $1 million, would you cosplay as the Cardinal and let us do a 3D scan and print you out as like the great stretch goal?
Yeah, if we get to $1 million.
Not 2 million. 1 million.
Yeah, it's if we get to a million. Two.
Not two. Two.
Might as well make it three.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes. If we get to a million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes, I will. Yeah. Yes, of course I would do something.
All right, boys, you got me.
Yeah.
You heard it right here.
Yeah. Is this for Adepticon or Gen Con?
Well, whenever it would be released, it would be available in this Kickstarter. So
I'm talking about when does the cosplaying occur?
Oh, you don't have to wear it to a show.
Oh, okay.
You just got to dress up so we can scan you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right, and then you know.
And take pictures.
And then, right.
Lots of pictures.
Right.
All right, fair enough. I can make that promise.
All right, boys.
Well, you heard it here first. All
right, get your folks out there. Get everybody on board. Every retailer in the nation, and if you hear this, you know, back that Kickstarter.
Oh, so actually that brought up something. So we had some comments on one of the Facebook groups about retail pledges. Mm-hmm. That's a great way for the people that, like, they don't have the money right now, but they really want to get into it. They can go down and talk to their local game stores to jump on there as a store retail pledge. Have you had any of those jump in already?
Yeah. I can't remember the last number. Last time I checked, we had, I think, six or seven.
Retail backers?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the Cartel.
Cartel.
16.
Oh, nice.
Okay, 16.
All right.
That's so pretty good.
That number's jumped up a bunch. Yeah, so, I mean, I would agree that it's not only a good way to, you know, for people who look at the Kickstarter and say, you know, the timing's not going to work out for my budget, it's also another great way for people who find themselves, you know, where shipping is going to be expensive, to pretty much, like, work with their retailer to make it almost like a hub for them. Right?
So, right on.
And
for the retailers out there that might be listening to this, one of the things you can always do, too, is get your consumers that are wanting it or reach out to your consumer, your player base, and be like, hey, we're considering backing this Kickstarter. Show it to everybody there and be like, if you want to get in on it with the store, they can come give you a deposit towards the pledge, the retailer pledge, to guarantee their spot and their product. And it doesn't have to be, you know, what an end, you know, if you went all in or a Christmas Day package or whatever.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the retailer package is missing some of the bells and whistles of like a Christmas morning one.
Sure.
Because there's no, you know, the acrylic and everything would be chosen separately.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the 100%. We talked to enough retailers that we feel we've got an approach that should work for most of them. So yeah, it's a straightforward, it's a simple deposit.
Right.
It's a small deposit for a retailer. And then what that does is that opens up the backer kit for them, and then they can choose basically a la carte what they want. We're going to put together a couple bundles of product that we think are good retailer kind of introductions, right?
Like yeah.
One of each of the starter sets, or you know, the faction bundles,
yep.
Yeah, created together.
Nice.
So basically, if you're a retailer and you're like, I don't know what Warzone really is, I don't know where to get in. Here, I can click on this, and this is what Res Nova says.
This is the bundle.
Says.
This is what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they're someone who's super savvy, and they're like, I know what my players want, or I know what I want as a retailer because I yeah. loved this game, you know, 25 years ago, and so they can pick and choose what they want yeah. out of there as well. So yeah. Nice. So for retailers. We hope it's a good setup. It's a good approach.
Yeah,
right on.
And that's what I think. That's one of the things that will make the longevity of the game viable is the retail support.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, yeah.
And the $1 million.
And the $1 million. That's right.
We played the heck out of this game in our friendly local gaming store yeah. back in the late 90s, and so 100%. I fully believe that. That retail presence is important. It's the place where gamers meet other gamers, make yep. friends, and get to play games. So, basement tables are awesome, but
it's better in a game store.
Better in a game store.
It's that whole environment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason why I think games are better at a convention. You play a game for the first time at a convention, you're like, whoa, this is amazing.
Yeah.
and it's just because of the environment.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of positive energy.
100%.
Yeah. I can dig it.
Well, I think with that, that's a little bit of a talk for the Kickstarter. How about we jump into some mechanics?
Sweet.
Cool. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some mechanics.
Nice.
There's your pause, Brian. Because Brian will go in and he'll yep. listen to it.
Yep.
And it's so funny because the last episode, he was listening and he's like, where am I supposed to put the commercial? You guys just kind of kept going.
like now? Like we're still talking?
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. Yeah.
But we do need to pause it.
Yeah.
Because I do need to go to the restroom.
No!
Yeah. Hey, if you're looking for Dead Zone the Podcast, check out every social media platform because you're probably going to find us. Just look us up, Dead Zone the Podcast.
All right, welcome back. So let's jump into some mechanics. Because one of the things for the Kickstarter is we had a whole bunch of live events, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You did a couple of them. What did you do exactly?
So I basically hung out as Brian did a live stream for the first 4 hours of the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Answering questions in his chat, and then Brian and I joined the Build Paint Play stream or channel. Dave Taylor, Jake Jeske to talk about what the Kickstarter was, what the miniatures were. That's a cool little show where they look at number one, they kind of talk about some particular subject, right?
Yeah,
they just got back from Adepticon, just got back from LVO, whatever it might be.
Sure,
and then they go through. A bunch of painted submissions for people that are part of their Facebook group.
Oh, okay.
And just kind of sharing the love of the hobby, the community involvement that miniatures painting really fosters. So we wound out the night there, and it was cool. We were live on that when we hit our funding goal. So,
yeah,
yeah.
It was pretty cool.
So, and then of course we did a live play of the game.
Yes, you did.
At a local mm-hmm. store, and like about 20 minutes. Not even 20 minutes, like 10, 15 minutes after we hit stop on the record is when you hit it.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, sweet. Because we were outside picking everything away. And I'm like, wait, they just hit it.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. The first day's events, those were a blast. And yes, we very much appreciate you organizing that event.
We had a blast doing it. But it brought up a question. So with mechanics, of course, we're playtesting, and so we're still trying to learn everything.
Sure.
And it's fun because we're going from different game systems to jumping in and learning this, and we missed a few things. One of the things that we missed was how wounds work.
Sure. Yep.
Let's jump in that and give our listeners the idea of what the wounds do correctly.
Sure. So, on average, just like Warzone back in the day, so the veteran players will be familiar with this. Most models have a single wound.
Okay. Right?
And now in previous iterations or in a lot of other skirmish type games out there, you suffer that wound, you're removed from the table, right?
Yeah.
You're dead. Since we're playing with a small model count, we wanted to preserve the opportunity for models to come under fire, right? To take kind of superficial wounds, right? Things that aren't just going to immediately remove them from the battlefield.
Sure.
And also give an opportunity for things like medics to have a role in the game. Nice. So, yeah, exactly.
I like medics.
I've heard.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we decided to do was make it so that a model did not get removed from the battlefield unless they failed their armor save by a sufficient amount. So in general, if you fail an armor save by 6 or more, you're dead.
You're dead.
Now, if you are a multi-wound model, that slightly changes. So those additional wounds become almost like a blade of armor, right? You take those things off. So Razid, which has multiple wounds, does not worry about the degree of their failure until they have a number of wound counters on them equal to their wound stat. So,
okay.
So you think about it, one wound model, they fail their armor save, they take a wound counter.
Yep.
If that failure, so they now have a number of wound counters equal to their wound stat.
Yep.
If they failed that wound by 6 or more, that roll, they're just immediately removed. Mm-hmm. If they failed by less, then they just take that wound counter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, Razid, he fails his armor save. Doesn't matter what he fails it by, he just takes a wound counter.
Takes a wound counter.
Because he's got multiple wounds.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, once you have a number of wound counters that are equal to your wound stat,
yep,
you also double the failure of any future wound failures.
Ow!
So the idea being, so you're a one wound model.
Yep.
If you fail your first wound, your armor roll, but you only fail by 1 to 5, right?
Yeah.
You just take a wound counter on you. Because again, you don't get killed immediately unless you fail by 6 or more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you have a wound counter on you equal to the number of wounds on your wound stat. Any future failures, you double the magnitude of that failure. So the idea being, you can take a wound, but you're not going to take a second wound. Right? You're almost guaranteed to die.
And if you do, you're definitely Sylvester Stallone.
Right, right. Because if you think about it, if you fail by 6 or more,
yeah,
which means that in any future cases,
it's you 12.
Could only fail by 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Because it was double to 2 or 4. Once you, if you fail by 3, that doubles to 6 and you're dead.
Yep.
So your margin for error becomes really, really, really tight if you have a number of wound counters on you equal to your wound stat. So so again, a model like a Razid, a big model, does not worry about those things until they have a number of wound counters equal to their wound stat.
Nice.
Now that's also shows some realism, right, in that combat scenario, because you can get shot. Anybody can get shot. I mean, it isn't necessarily going to kill you.
Right.
Right. Yep. But you're not going to move as well. You're not going to shoot as well. You're going to have your, restrictions. Yep. And when you get shot again.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah, you're probably going to die. I'm the one wound counter character.
Yeah.
But but like you said, that also gives the opportunity for a medic to come in.
Yep, 100%.
Do a medic thing, which.
Yep. Yeah. Which I like might medics. Might be a thing for Rick.
Yeah, I like medics, not just in game, but in life.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and also.
And Namor, just in case anybody wanted to know.
And Namor. It also gives for some serious thematic gameplay.
Yep.
Like that, oh my God, I made that roll. This guy survived. Now I need the medic.
Yep. Hashtag Trencher Dave.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole whole joke about Trencher Dave came along because we had a trencher who just would not die. Yeah. Right? So, yeah, he had his wound counters on him.
Chesty puller over here. 16 times. Still was able to storm the ridge and take over the battle station there or whatever.
Nice. Yep.
Trencher Dave.
Yep, 100%. So the idea being, again, we want the game to play quick, so we want models to be able to be removed.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not just a matter of, hey, everybody gets 2 to 3 wounds, so you have to go through those.
Yeah,
the idea is that you could potentially fail and die right away. And obviously, more damaging, higher power weapons are more likely to kill you just right away because the strength is going to be that much higher. Which means that the damage is going to be that much higher, which means that the likelihood of you failing by a greater margin increases.
Yeah.
So that was I think for the most part in your battle report, you guys got it right. But yeah, I think somebody called out one spot where somebody got shot, failed their armor save, and the model was immediately removed. And yeah. I think that, yep, that was, so in that situation, should have gotten a wound counter unless they failed to buy six or more, yeah. in which case they still would have been removed immediately.
Yep. Which, mm-hmm. hopefully that helps some of the listeners as far as clearing that up.
Absolutely.
Because there has been some healthy conversations about it.
Yep.
But I figured why not get that out here too.
Yeah.
To, you know, talk to the man when it comes to the wounds.
That's right. The man over here.
With the medic next to him.
Well, I mean, I'm a real life medic. Was.
But once you were, you never forget.
I mean, I forget stuff all the time.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Direct pressure, elevation. I don't, what is that for? Who cares?
Nice. But so in the rule book, one of the things that we'll do as well is we will probably put almost like a flow chart.
Yeah.
Nice. Just so it, while that degree of explanation might not really be necessary, we know that some people are visual learners so that they can see, okay, step by step by step by step. Okay, failed, wound counter. Do my wound counters equal my wound stat? Yes. Did I fail by six or more? Yes. Remove model, right? And just go, we can lay it out in that way.
A flow chart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Like a flow chart.
Yep, so probably, because I think you're right. I think that's probably the one place in the game where there is a level of complexity that people are like, okay, I'm not grabbing this immediately. Yep.
Well, I also think that, like in that example of what you guys were doing, you were at a store for the first time.
Yep.
You were live streaming here for the first time in that capacity.
Yeah.
There's going to be some misses.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And when you're playing at a pace.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's trying to not...
Right.
When you play at home, it's and you're trying this for the first time, you're taking your time.
Were you going to say in your basement while mom's up making spaghetti or meatloaf?
No, she was baking cookies, but that's besides the point.
and also, you know, say something that I'm sure like competitive players will gasp at, but it also doesn't matter.
Yep.
Right? Like, okay, so you missed and you should have left the guy on there with a wound counter, but you took him away right away. Handicapped you, but you know what? The game keeps playing.
Game keeps going, yeah.
It's okay.
And did you have a good time?
Yes. Exactly. No, 100%.
It's right up there with... I can't count on my hands how many times that I've been playing one of these miniatures games, and I totally forgot about that guy I left in that building.
Right.
That might have actually been able to score the points I needed. Right. Totally forgot about him. Yep. And then we're cleaning the table because I lost, and I moved the building, and... There's my dude sitting right there.
He's the guy that's... I've been on the radio this whole time. I don't know why they're not responding.
Nobody's listening to me.
It's Treasure Dave.
All of my allies have left. The enemies have abandoned the battlefield. I'm just standing here.
I'm calling in my 9 line to get a helo lift out of here, but nobody's responding.
Yeah. Because that's never happened.
That's kind of funny is like, that would be a Treasure Dave thing, I think.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. In the next episode of the Further Adventures of Trencher Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm fairly certain that he has walked literally across the entire Martian desert by himself at some point.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
Nice.
He's going to have his own mythos, this guy, right?
Yeah, I think this is a perfect opportunity for a small, like, indie press comic.
I agree. Like Source Point Press right here in Michigan.
That's right.
Or Caliber Comics.
That's right.
Caliber needs some new breath breathed into them.
There we go.
Because their life is like they're on the fire. They're on the table where it's like beep. Caliber Comics.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Then
and if you're, and anybody from Caliber something. Is hearing hearing that, you know it's true.
Wow. So with that,
just saying.
Let's switch gears.
All right. Cool.
So Rick put a challenge out for Alex on hitting $1 million.
Yes,
which is kind of crazy.
I mean, it's not. I mean, we're
it's
one
kind of
the way there.
But
if you look at it in those kind of numbers, we're a tenth of the way.
A tenth of the way.
Yeah.
But you brought up.
I mean, yes, we are actually more than a tenth, and that's pretty awesome.
You brought up the Brotherhood.
I did.
So one of the things we've been doing is some lore.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this cardinal thing in the Brotherhood? What is that?
So the cardinal, and here's another wonderful bit of Mutant Chronicles oddity that is confused the heck out of me the first time I read it. So the cardinal is the overarching leader of the Brotherhood.
Okay.
That being said, there are also cardinals of each of the great cathedrals on each of the main planets. So, for instance, you have Cardinal Dominic, who's the Sheriff of Luna, the Cardinal of the Cathedral in Luna. He's a cardinal, and even though there's no difference in title, right, he's not the cardinal.
The cardinal.
So there's the cardinal.
Who it sounds like they didn't want to use the word the Pope.
right, exactly. What do we put above cardinals? Well, we can't do popes, so
cardinal.
There is the cardinal, who is the overarching leader.
Okay.
And then you have all of these sub-cardinals. The cardinal is a... So one of the things that we've been trying to do with Warzone Eternal is figure out which kind of deviation in canon we're going to grab a hold of and say this is the version we're using.
Sure.
And in general, we said it's first edition Warzone and second edition Mutant Chronicles role-playing game.
Okay.
Well, even narrowing it down to that, you know, we've got things like the Brotherhood Sacred Warriors, right? What are they actually armed with? Do they have sword and shield? Do they have sword and carbine? What does the carbine actually look like? Do they have helmets? Do they not have helmets? Because there's multiple depictions.
Sure.
And a lot of that just came from the fact that they're producing books. They've got, here's a piece of art. How much can we use this art? Right?
Yeah.
And so it got used in a bunch of different places. And then people built off of that. So one of the things we've been trying to do is establish, like, this is what we're going to use as our baseline.
Sure.
So the cardinal, the overarching cardinal, is an awesome one. Now, it's not going to probably impact Warzone Eternal's development mechanically, miniatures, anything like that. But there are two presentations of the cardinal. So the latter one, the one that came out in Mutant Chronicles second edition, is that... You know, Nathaniel Durand was the original cardinal, was the one who brought the use of the art to humanity, became the initial like resistance to the Dark Legion, organized the corporations, and was really the person who identified this is an overarching threat to all of mankind. We need to organize, led the Venusian Crusade to slay Elgaroth and ultimately establish the Brotherhood as like this beacon to defend humanity.
The beacon of light.
Exactly. And he was mortally wounded, he dies, another cardinal is named, this cardinal takes over, takes a lot of Durand's teachings, etches them into kind of the foundations of these tablets that that are like the cornerstones of all the cathedrals, so they tell the story. And then there's been a succession of cardinals since then.
Right? Yeah.
So that's the more typical story, or the one that like makes the most sense, right?
Sure.
Is that it's, here's a guy, and then it's a bunch of people after. The first edition Mutant Chronicles role-playing game source book for Brotherhood, though, notes that there are only three people who have ever been the cardinal.
Okay.
So when Nathaniel Durand was the cardinal, he had two brothers.
Alex.
Yes. Have you read this?
No. You are one of those iterations, right?
You will be.
So, and the idea being that he recognized that, humanity was going to constantly be engaged in infighting, that there needed to be like this strong single figure kind of watching over mankind. And so while they had taught the art to all of their, the mystics and the keepers of the art and the Brotherhood, they had discovered this one additional super powerful form that allowed them to basically extend the lifespan of a person.
Really?
And so what they did was Nathaniel Durand kind of reached his like, oh, I should be dead by now. I'm too old. So I'm going to fake my death. And then one of my two brothers is going to be like a lowly acolyte and is going to spend his, 30 years working his way back up. And then he will eventually be named the next cardinal. And then they're going to rotate through. And so that in the thousands of years, there's only been three cardinals. They've all had different names. They've all presented them. So trying to figure out
what's the original's name again?
Nathaniel Durand.
Nathaniel Durand, Alex Durand.
I think.
And Marcus?
I don't remember what the...
Because it sounds very much like how you on Underworld they would sleep a vampire while the other one Two vampires are asleep by
one rule.
That's exactly right. Yes.
And then they just kind of rotate through.
Yep, 100%. So scary. Same type of thing. And I can't remember the name of the two brothers in there. but yeah, so the idea
we'll
is
have to look it up.
Those three kind of just rotate through.
I like that.
Now,
I like that too.
Arguably, the two stories could work together, right? Because all of the named, because in the second edition rule book, they get a list. These are all the cardinals.
Yeah.
Those could just be false names for the same three brothers. Yeah. So, right. Some of the lore doesn't fit nicely into that, but it could still generally work that way. And so I think that's probably the approach we're going to take, because you know the idea of the Brotherhood is this benevolent organization that does show up and accuse you of being a heretic.
Yeah, definitely.
But the fact that they're also led by three dudes who think that they're so infallible that they are the only ones who can lead this organization for its entire existence just kind of creates further this idea that. No. You guys literally are not the good guys. But
yeah, it seems a little shady.
Yeah, it does. And so, it's an easy thing to say, like, oh, the Brotherhood is good and light, and the Dark Legion is evil and dark, and it's a simple binary.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, the corporations are all gray and muddy and backstabbing, so the Brotherhood, they're just humans as well. And so, yeah, I think that's
probably
the direction we're going. Yeah, exactly.
Heretic!
Yes. I mean, it's great. Like, you get to a point where the Brotherhood has become so ingrained and is so desirous of maintaining their power that like some capital executive is like, I'd really like that middle management position. Hey, Brotherhood, I think Bruce over here might be a heretic.
And all of a sudden, you hear the boots.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, a pair of mortificators bust in the door. Bruce is dragged
and
out.
Gone.
And now I'm, the regional sales director for
Capital.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah, I mean.
And good is always such a huge just matter of perspective.
Yep. Wait, who
was that?
What happened there?
Just like the Inquisition.
Oh. Yep, the Brotherhood just arrives.
That's right. We're here, baby.
Hey, Jeff.
Howdy.
Welcome.
Thank you.
That's great.
It was like perfect timing.
But no, 100%, right? Any narrative where there's a very clear, this is good, this is bad.
Oh, 100%.
No, I mean, the Dark Legion, there's nothing good about them. They are the
absolute. Are you sure?
Well, you know what? You're probably right.
I mean, they're just trying to expand. But when we're talking about the Brotherhood and the Dark Legion, it kind of,
It's kind of
a little bit less complicated than reality.
Yeah, because it's a game.
Exactly.
Exactly.
No, I like the version of it's
three brothers.
Yep. Rotating through,
exactly.
Taking on different names to just continue that illusion. Yep.
Exactly right.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool lore piece.
Which now makes me think.
Oh, right, boy. Here we go.
Is if we got you and Brian.
And you.
Not me.
Come on.
I'm not immersed.
You as a cardinal?
No. I'm not immersed as much as they are. In this whole space, we need to find a third person.
I think we know the third person.
Hall?
I think so.
What?
Yeah. You three.
Me?
Guys, and then we do a sculpt that forms together like the tribunal. The living tribunal. Right?
Tribunal.
Where all three of the busts come together to form a unimine. Right? And that's the $1 million stretch right there.
All right. Okay. All
right. $1 million stretch.
And then, at Adepticon or at Gen Con.
Oh, now you've added it. That.
If we're gonna go that kind of narrative route, which I think is awesome,
sure,
right? And one of the stretch or one of the actual pledge levels on the campaign are, I think it's like for $1,000, you're gonna get one of your faction boxes or whatever, early, but you're also gonna have the opportunity at one of those two events, depending on which one is. Where it's
to play
like
some
closer.
Games and have dinner and
yeah, you get to come and hang out with the Resinova group and play. Early access
with the Cardinals.
With the Cardinals.
Right? I'll tell you what,
in full cosplay regalia, right?
That would be freaking awesome.
We hit $1 million.
And I'll be a merman.
If we hit a million dollars,
I will.
That's a safe statement.
I will pledge that Rick Hall will be there.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And that means that all the Cardinals will be there.
Boy.
I'll dress up like a merman or a free marine.
All
right.
Yeah.
Right? And then whoever else is in the squad there will be another like who's like a major guard character type for the Cardinals.
Those are the Fury Elite Guard.
Those are women though, right?
No, Fury Elite Guard. Well, they could be men or women. They're right. But they're the super heavily armored, massive double-handed swords.
But you got to have somebody like out of shape who can't really walk very well.
You have any characters like that? Right.
Yeah. No. Actually,
like a 400 pound. I could just be an Agaroth. Well,
there's a dude. I could be. There's a dude named Jake Kramer who is a former Free Marine who is like washed out of the military and is now just a mercenary.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like Rick.
Yeah. That's right. The Free Marines made me the man I am today.
Oh my god!
Right. Exactly. All right, boys and ladies, you heard it there, right here. You heard it. All right. Get it to a million.
And all of a sudden, at least I'm going to be an Adeptcon as a cardinal.
What? Exactly. Yeah, you are. Yes.
Yeah, it'll be glorious.
All right.
Three cardinals and Jake Kramer.
Well, I think with that, it's a wrap for the day.
Sounds good.
Thank you, guys. And don't forget to follow us on all the social medias. And have a good night.
Peace.